So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time. Waiting for tonight. Oh. So, take a look.
Welcome everyone to Review Away. I'm John Pollock, joined as always by the man who this program is named after, Wei Ting. Wei, how are you doing?
I'm good, yeah, but even though this program is named after me, I think it's equal parts both of us.
I think you take ownership of it,
though. I really do not.
It's a special edition of Review Away because we usually do this way on a Friday before the law on Sunday, but you and I are actually going to be going on a road trip together this week. So it's actually Monday, family day right now, and there is no one here at the Fight Network but you and I, and we have convened to talk about WWA Revolution.
Yes, so yet once again, we do not have an engineer in the audio booth. I've just hit record, so anything could happen. You could be hearing, we could be doing a podcast that nobody is hearing.
That's true.
We'll find out.
We will find out. Now, I did want to update some people here. As we have alluded to a few times on this show, the equipment we use here is not state of the art. Is that a fair assessment, Wei?
Yes.
So, currently we have some issues in regards to doing interviews here at the Fight Network over the phone. And last week I did an interview with John Morrison, of which the audio was just so horrible I could not run it on the law.
Really?
And this was very frustrating for me. And for this show, I very much was looking forward to trying to interview Jeremy Borash, because in addition to doing play-by-play on the show, he was the matchmaker, and he was involved all over the show and could have probably given us some interesting stories, being that I'm sure he's never asked about WWA Revolution. But unfortunately right now, as I said, me and Wei are leaving for Calgary this week, and there's literally no time that I can go to a different studio across town to do an interview like that, nor can I do one currently here at the Fight Network. So that is why, if you'll notice on the website, we don't have any new Fight Network radio programs. We haven't been able to do interviews on this show, so I just want to address that situation. We hopefully will have a resolution within the next month where Wei, you and I will be able to do interviews as we do the show together.
That'll be cool. That'll be very cool.
So just wanted to bring people up to date there on the audio situation. However, last week's show was ridiculous, Wei. It was an hour and 18 minutes, which I will even agree, that is a long amount of time for one of our shows. And I guess adding an interview on top of that is unnecessary, I guess.
Yeah.
And we actually had a caller on the law last night, Wei, on last Sunday night, who asked, whatever happened to Live Audio Extra? And I was explaining that, well, we do Review Away, and if we were to do Live Audio Extra on top of that, we're just getting ridiculous here.
Like, it would be.
Last week's download was 3 hours long because of the law and Review Away, and I appreciate those of you who downloaded. I know it's a big file.
Well, it took me 5 minutes.
Well, then I don't apologize.
But there are a few of you who have asked that we put the podcast on separately, aside from the law, and I think eventually that should happen. Well, what do you think?
We can definitely address it. I mean, the whole point of doing Review Away was that it was an add-on to the law, so that it came as one kind of packaged program together. That was kind of the mindset of doing something additionally, so that maybe you caught some of the law, and then if you download it, you at least have an incentive, even if you hear the law, to download, and it's all concentrated onto one download rather than fragmenting your audience, so to speak. So
maybe it won't happen.
We'll see, Wei. Maybe we'll have a vote later on about it and see if people are adamant about having it separate. But nonetheless, Wei, we want to get into the review for this week. WWA Revolution, a show that I guarantee you probably no one has seen. It took place in February of 2002, February the 24th to be exact, from Las Vegas, Nevada at the Aladdin Hotel and Casino. Now, the WWA had run a show prior, the previous fall, and this featured a lot of talent that was not picked up by the WWE after WCW went out of business. And they did a tour, I believe it was in Scotland back, oh no, it was in Australia the previous fall. And this was their follow-up show, their first show in the U.S. It was a live pay-per-view, and it actually, Wei, took place the day after the first ever Ring of Honor show.
Really?
And we actually saw two of the three guys in the main event of that first ROH show on this card the next day in Christopher Daniels and Loki. But anyway, there's a little background information on WWA Revolution.
Oh, that's very interesting.
So we start very off the show, Wei, with the promoter Andrew McManus, who delivers a very, very nervous speech.
Oh, my God, on his webcam.
on his webcam. Let's hear some of that, and you can hear the chatter in the background as he's delivering this on paper.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Andrew McManus, and I'm the CEO of the World Wrestling All-Stars. And I'd like to welcome you to the Aladdin Casino here in Las Vegas, and for the very first time, the WWA's first attempt on American soil. I'm also very proud to bring to you tonight a swathe of wrestling superstars who will give their all out there in the squared circle. For those of you in attendance for the live show, you will witness a production never seen before in a wrestling event. And for you, those of you at home, you will see a sophisticated production of pyrotechnics, beautiful women, and wrestling events never seen on pay-per-view. I'd also like to take this time to thank Gary Thayer and all the staff of the Aladdin Casino for their professionalism and their support. Unfortunately, on a less savory note, I have to announce that Randy Savage will not be in attendance tonight. Through no fault of Randy's, as he actually has been in training and really wanted to be here tonight, his business advisor decided on Thursday that contract negotiations had stalled. I very much regret not having Randy here tonight, but do hope in the near future he will come on board with us. Now, as part of the company policy, expect the unexpected, sit back, and I look forward to you, and thank you for your supporting the World Wrestling All-Stars.
So that is Andrew McManus, definitely a little camera shy, I think. Way.
I mean, compare this to perhaps Vince McMahon appearing on Raw on a very important episode of Raw, addressing the crowd from his
on a flip cam.
His office is in Stamford, and here you have a dude
backstage
in front of a shaky webcam, talking nervously to the crowd, telling you basically that your main eventer has not shown up for the day.
Randy Savage, funny. Who I didn't want to ruin it for you because you were so excited when I told you
this.
You're like, Randy Savage is on this? And then you mentioned it again, and I knew he did not appear on this show, but I want you to react.
He says contract negotiations have stalled.
Yes, and I actually looked up the Wrestling Observer newsletter that covered this show, and apparently Randy, at the last minute, upped his asking price to $250,000 for this show, and they said, fuck off. Don't worry,
they found a very suitable replacement.
Yes, a second-generation phenom. We have a live band kick us off, Way, who sang the song Revolution.
This was a Creed cover band, wasn't it?
Was it?
No, it wasn't. But the dude looked just like...
Do you know who the band was?
I have no idea.
Neither did I.
I really thought they were a Creed cover band.
They were horrible. I fast-forwarded to the song. It was such an annoying song.
Come on! Another slap in the face, right on the sham of the air. It's a revolution. Brazil of all out of place. Open your mind to the change of evolution. Yeah.
Yeah, what was the point of this? I mean, you devote the first 3 minutes of your broadcast to a band nobody knows.
Well, I think at this time, Way, during this part of 2002, it was in vogue to start pay-per-views off with live bands like WrestleMania X8.
This was their WrestleMania.
Tearaway sounded like fucking Jay-Z in comparison to this. I mean, in terms of likeness. I guess that's not a good comparison. I just mean... That's a good song in comparison to this bad song, Revolution.
Gotcha.
I'll be honest, I would love to have that song underneath here to play, but I probably will not find it online, nor am I going to go out of my way to find Revolution by a band I don't even know. Yeah. That's not an easy song to just type in, and I'm going to get Beatles.
You get Beatles, yeah.
Then we go to the opening video, Way, and I know you always pay a very close attention to these opening videos, and I just wrote here, definitely not WrestleMania level.
No, they showed a video. When I say shown, they put a camera to the video screen live. They did that for like the first 30 seconds before they realized. The production on the show was terrible. I mean, Andrew McManus off the top, he even says, you'll witness production that you've never seen before.
That's true. That was true.
And that was absolutely true.
Never said it'd be great.
The video production crew, they seemed to be... like just maybe freelancers or local TV cable access type of.
It's very low rent. And I mean, a lot of people are going to say, well, hey, don't get on them. They don't have the budget of the WWE. But here's my issue, okay? You're going on a live pay-per-view and you want to lure fans in that are wrestling fans. And at that point in time in North America on pay-per-view, wrestling fans meant WWE fans. Mm-hmm. And this is not 1978 anymore. Production values are very, very high. And if you want to bring me in, I'm going to be watching with WWE standards in the back of my head. And if you're the WWE and you're trying to make a dent into that audience, then you have to be presenting something that is at least comparable to what you're used to. And this was the production was just a huge failure.
Yeah, there are constantly guys walking in front of cameras blocking.
Oh, it was just so amateur.
Yeah.
Jeremy Borash and Mark Madden were your commentators, and I groaned when I found out that Mark Madden was going to be on this because I just hated him in WCW. And I will say, we'll talk about this throughout, not as bad as the last WCW show we did. I thought he did add some. I thought him and Borash had their moments on this show.
Yes, I actually liked Borash. He sounded professional.
Borash. To the best of my knowledge, he might have done some small stuff. I don't think he had done play-by-play before this show, and that's another thing I wanted to ask him about. Because I thought, you know, there were moments where he was lost and, you know, not knowing some of the moves, but for a first time out on a live pay-per-view, I was impressed.
Yeah, he played his role well as the straight man and let Mark Madden do his shtick. Which was not always good. But
The knock on Madden for me is that he'll try to be inside and get comments in that the average fan is not going to get, and his primary concern is get myself over first, and then if we have time, we'll get to the product.
Oh, we'll get to that. Yeah.
Our first opening match, this looked promising on paper. We had a six-way, at the time, cruiserweight match, and it was for... it was just a six-way match. No title on the line here. Nova, Loki, Sharkboy, AJ Styles, Tony Mameluke, and Christopher Daniels. And this matchway was just pretty much just a six-way elimination match. So some very, very solid workers here at the time. And this was before a lot of people knew any of these guys. As I said, Ring of Honor had only kicked off the day prior, and that's where Loki really got a huge push. Daniels, of course, out of the Southern California area. Tony Mameluke, you'd seen in WCW. AJ Styles, unless you were watching NWA Wildside, you had no idea who this guy was, other than that very, very brief period in WCW. Shark Boy, I guess, had anyone seen him at this point?
I personally hadn't.
Yeah, so he was relatively new. I guess Nova would have been maybe the most well-known guy in this from coming out of ECW. And boy, he had like a new body on him at this point compared to his superhero days.
Yeah.
And this drove me nuts because I think 8 times during this match, Mark Madden said, Nova, he's not a superhero anymore.
He's serious now. He's not a cartoon character.
Let's get into this. Early on, Tony Mameluke, it looked like he broke his nose somewhere. I missed the spot, but his nose was a mess.
He was bleeding just mere minutes into the match.
Shark Boy was the first elimination by Loki getting out of there. And then Borash, just out of nowhere, had this. The timing on this was really well. When Mark Madden was yelling something about Shark Boy, and Borash added, he's not a man, he's a fish.
What was so good?
I saw it was funny. They're talking about Shark Boy.
Okay. I'm a big, big fan of Loki. I always have been. He has just such a unique style. I don't know how his run in WWE is going to be, but if they're allowed to let him wrestle the way he wrestles in these type of matches, there's no reason he shouldn't be over huge, especially with children. He's just such a unique, exciting style.
I fear what name they'll give him.
Though. His name is Caval.
Caval is what he's been wrestling in Florida, but when they bring him up, I just expect Mark Sanders. he of all people, does not suit a traditional name.
Kilo.
Kilo, yeah, he'll have a drug gimmick.
No, or like Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, that's Daniel Bryan. God. Next up... Mameluke was then eliminated via a Styles Clash, which Borash had no idea what this move was, and Madden informed them it's the Styles Clash. Styles later then attempted a shooting star press to the floor, and I thought he was dead because he almost missed his target. Daniels eliminates Loki. Mark Madden informs us that Shark Boy has eaten creative consultant Terry Taylor backstage. Styles then did a second rope Styles Clash onto Daniels to eliminate him, and then it came down to Styles and Nova, and then this is when I noticed how many times Madden was noting that Nova was no longer a cartoon character. Finish comes when Nova hit what was later dubbed the Flux Capacitor that the Maximo brothers did early on in ROH and TNA onto Styles, and Nova gets the win. So clearly Nova, they were planning to give a very, very big push to here, and Styles takes the final fall. So Nova gets the victory in your first opening match. This was good, not the best kind of style of match I've seen with the, you know, X Division, Cruiserweight Division, but a good opener. So
just a very much an ROH style spot fest to open up the show. I gotta say, I think it could have been a lot better without a lot of the experimental camera angles throughout the show. They had some very awkward jib shots that worked at times, but for the most part, I think took away from the action. One particular hard camera was like all the way up in the rafters. It was almost like an overhead camera and just looked very awkward.
We then go to a another pretty cheap video. This one with featuring Bret Hart, who. He comes out to the arena to this very generic music after a generic video, and he cuts a promo, and he puts the WWE over huge by saying, "The WWE is a small promotion, but there aren't many left." And he says, "There's guys out here breaking their necks everywhere, so appreciate them." And he says, "Randy Savage didn't show up because it's a small promotion, and he won't be here tonight." Calls him a space cowboy. And he says, "Well, I've got a replacement for you, and I'm partial to second-generation wrestlers. So, competing tonight for the WWA Heavyweight Championship, Jeff Jarrett and Brian Christopher, the master of the hip-hop drop."
Complete silence from the audience.
Imagine you paid $20 for this, and you're given Brian Christopher as a replacement. Imagine they did that at WrestleMania 3. Then Bret went on to congratulate Team Canada, who earlier in the day won the men's gold medal at the Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City that year.
In hockey.
Yes, and now the Olympics are going on now, way.
They are.
Eight years later. And this obviously brought along a lot of boos because he was cutting this promo in Las Vegas, which is not in Canada. And then he says, "Well, don't worry, because, you know, we got the gold medal, but the U.S., they're going to get a bigger prize, because you guys are going to get Osama bin Laden."
He somehow ties...
Where did this come from?
Men's Canadian hockey to the war on terrorism. Bret Hart.
And this got a pop from the crowd. And Bret Hart just... I think he just came out there and they just said, "Just talk for 5 minutes about whatever you want." Okay. Yeah, he tied in hockey with the biggest terrorist in the world. So, great promo by Bret Hart.
They're almost equivalent, the U.S. getting Osama. This was only months before his stroke, wasn't it?
Yeah, that happened in late June.
Yeah.
So, next we go backstage, and we have two midgets, Puppet and Tio, who are actually going to be featured on a reality series that Spike is going to be airing.
Oh, is that
midget
true?
Wrestlers.
And fantastic.
Then, I don't know how many people remember Alan Funk, but he was in the WCW developmental territory, part of the power plant, was where he was trained, he was brought up, he competed as Alan Funk on Saturday night, and then they gave him the name Kiwi, and then later named him Kiwi, because I guess enough people didn't get the connotation of Kiwi to queer, and that was, Kiwi. So he has a new gimmick, Way.
What was that, John?
The Funkster. And my God, this man completely changed his body around for this gimmick. He was never this jacked in WCW, but my God, his look was like spot on to Hulk Hogan circa like 1978.
I thought he did a pretty good impression.
I thought it was great. Yeah. I don't know what the long-term effects of this gimmick would have on his endocrine system, but that leads us to our next match, Reno. Remember Reno?
I do remember
from Reno. The Natural Born Thrillers in WCW, The Dying Days, against Alan Funk, the Funkster. And I just wrote down here, the resemblance is scary. Mark Madden here, one of his many inside jokes, says, "I remember when the Funkster took on the Warriors pharmacist at Skydome." Huh. Because he was on roids. Yeah. And that was somewhat funny, considering he was describing Alan Funk here. Reno had a bald head with a ponytail.
Yeah, well,
that's a horrible look. It's like the Sultan look.
Yeah, I don't really get it. Wrestlers really have to stand out, though. So maybe that's
Is the payoff worth it? Walking around in public like that?
I personally don't think so.
It's not like he ever drew money with this Reno gimmick.
No, nobody said I'm going to watch this guy because he has a ponytail.
Reno, Mark Madden got in this really really lame joke about where Borash was talking about Reno. And then Madden came back and said, "No, we're in Las Vegas."
No, I heard that. I know, I completely agree.
Because Reno is also a city in Nevada. A Hilarious.
There are also a bunch of hooker jokes throughout the evening because Mark Madden likes to joke about that stuff.
Yep. Madden also noted in relation to the Funkster that he hopes Russo doesn't come out and call him a piece of garbage, stemming from the Bash at the Beach incident. And then after the match, they cut to signs for Sting, who was not on this show at all, and Chronic, who unfortunately were on this show. Who won this match? Alan Funk with a pile driver and then a leg drop. I guess that was the evolution of the Hogan finish. He hulked up, he funked up. And funked I guess that would have been a good t-shirt for him at the time called
Funkamania.
You funked up. As he's funking up, the whole crowd could chant, "You funked up."
Would you have bought one of these shirts?
No. But I would have laughed.
That's
what you gotta do on the indies. Come up with these cheap little things that people can chant that are mimics of real stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that'll make the
indies. You loved this show, didn't you?
I'm sorry, man. You really take the lead on this because I was falling in and out of sleep, I'll be honest.
To be honest, I thought this show was 2 hours, so when it went the full 3 hours, I was just groaning.
They almost ran out of time at the end.
Yeah, because you had to get in time for everything. Yeah. They show Scott Steiner arriving with women in a limo, and then the Disco Inferno comes out and issues an open challenge, and he's going to be on commentary until he has an opponent. And then they had this ridiculously awkward throw where the three of them are on camera and Borash is throwing to the ring announcer to go to the next match, but they weren't cutting away from the three at ringside, so they kept just awkwardly talking to each other, and all three just were deer in the headlights.
I think even Disco broke kayfabe at one point. He was just laughing about the exchange that he and Madden had rather than, you know, getting annoyed. And I gotta say, Mark Madden, going back to what you said earlier, I think he really took the shine away from Disco in this exchange. You could just tell, I mean, rather than putting over your performer, you're showing that the commentator is getting the best of the performer, and I was not into that.
During this whole time, did you notice a Japanese guy with a mullet standing behind them?
You know, I did, and I wasn't sure exactly if it was who I was thinking it was. I thought it could have just been some random fan.
Hiro Yoshi Tenzan.
Yeah.
Probably the best worker on this entire show, whose role was to stand behind the commentators all night long.
It wasn't all night long, I think. It was for the first portion.
Why?
Because you could actually see him being escorted to leave a bit later on.
What was the point of him being there?
Well, you'll see.
Oh, okay. That was his big spot. Next up, we have Native Blood, Navajo Warrior, and Ghost Walker against Chronic. All I noted in this, all racist jokes.
Yeah.
Throughout.
Native Americans wrestling in a casino.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, this was great fodder for Mark Madden in the Disco Inferno. I wrote terrible pump handle slam by Adams, win by Chronic.
And
less said, the better.
Yeah.
And after this, they plugged the next pay-per-view, which would be April the 14th in Melbourne, Australia, called WWE Eruption with two R's. Eruption.
Are there volcanoes in Australia?
Nope. I don't think so. Maybe there are. I don't know, to be honest. But you see, this
eruption.
First thing is a revolution. Yeah. Then you have an eruption.
Yeah. Because, I don't know. Who cares?
Next up came the comedy match of the night. It was Puppet and Tio, the midgets, in a hardcore midget battle. And for this, they decided to turn the mics on so that you could hear the commentary in the live crowd. And all it was a contest of Madden and Inferno to tell midget jokes and get laughs from the audience at the expense of this match. Early on, we heard Madden yell, "Kill the little bastard!" And this, it was just every line was followed by laughter in the crowd.
Yeah.
And this match, you just couldn't take it seriously, nor I really trying to.
No, you shouldn't be taking it seriously. This was all right.
Puppet won this match with an F5 onto thumbtacks.
Oh, Jesus.
Scott Steiner ran in and just threw these midgets around, threw one over the top rope. Then Tenzan throws Disco into the ring, and Steiner attacks Disco. They have an impromptu match that lasts about 2 minutes with Steiner putting the Steiner recliner on and I guess gets the win. Not even a real match.
Yeah, at this point, they put the cameras back on JB and Madden, and you could see somebody from WWA come in and tell Hiroyoshi Tenzan to, "Sir, can you come with me?" And
that was the spot, throwing Disco into the ring.
No mention of his name, no mention of who he was whatsoever. No. Maybe
it was leading the Tenzan and Disco at Eruption. The Steiner brings the women into the ring, and then they cut back to Madden, who starts combing his hair on camera. Next up, WWA International Cruiserweight Championship match, champion Psicosis defending against Juventud Guerrera and Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah, when I heard that this match was on the show, I was pleasantly surprised, of course, because the star power on the show is actually very good.
Not bad at all. This was during the time that Eddie Guerrero had been released by the WWE. He'd be back within 2 months.
What were the circumstances of his release?
Well, he was put into rehab at one point, and then I think he got out of rehab, and it was around either late October, early November 2001, where he had another incident, and they released him after that. So it was late 2001. He was out of a job, and he was just working indies. And he worked that first ROH show, and he worked against Super Crazy on that show, if I'm not mistaken. And then he did this show on the Sunday night, and he was getting rave reviews. He was working New Japan Pro Wrestling at this point as well, doing indie shots, and then WWE brought him in April. So he definitely looked, he was working out at this point.
He looked like, the action figure version of him.
Yeah, this was, he was Scott Putzky'd on this show. Very big.
Yeah.
Early on, we had a blocked Hurricane Rana and a frog splash to the back early on. That was the finish. Eddie Guerrero pinned Psicosis for the win. I'll be honest, I started cleaning my apartment during the midget match, and I kept cleaning it throughout this match, so I was not an active viewer for this match. Some good work. I expected a little more. I almost wish this was a singles with Hoovy and Eddie. I think they would have had a much better match. Nothing against Psicosis, just if there was one man I would take out, it would have been him. But, any two of these three. I just think the three-way, I'm not a big three-way fan to begin with. I don't generally like them that much.
I thought they did a decent job, though. I mean, there are a lot of good potential, interesting spots to be had in the three-way, and I think the three of these guys did a good job. This match just made me miss Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah, a fantastic performer.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Gets the win, gets the title. Would not be back to defend the title. Afterwards, he cuts a promo discussing his personal issues, and he's going to make his comeback, but he's doing this as a heel, where he's telling the fans to shut up. It was very weird. It was like you're doing a sympathetic babyface promo as a heel. And then Jerry Lynn comes out, who had been fired just recently by WWE. So this, I remember watching this, and this was actually a surprise that he showed up on this show. Looked in great shape, comes out, and he makes fun of Eddie Guerrero and says that Eddie Guerrero got his breaks because of his last name, and no one cares about his personal problems. And then they start fighting. I had no clue who was the heel and who was the babyface here. It was like two heels.
Yeah.
Cutting promos on each other. Ends with Jerry Lynn delivering a cradle pile driver to Eddie, and that's how his finish is. And I guess they were building to a Lynn-Eddie match, which would have been tremendous at the next Eruption pay-per-view.
Eruption. Yes.
2 hours.
It was a pleasant surprise seeing the two of these guys interact for a little bit, but yes, unfortunately, not a real match, and the match did not happen.
We then cut to the WWA dancers, and what did you think about them?
I liked when Madden, as they were still on, Madden says, "I want to thank Kimberly Page for spending the 15 minutes to teach these dancers their choreography."
Next up.
Insulting your product, right?
Yeah, that's great. Man, these dancers suck. Yeah. Devin Storm against Sabu, who was accompanied by Bill Alfonso in a no DQ match. This match went 85 minutes, according to what I... to what it felt like.
This was I started falling asleep throughout this one too. But you know what? This was an ECW style type of plunder match.
I hated it.
I was not a big fan of it either.
Of hardcore wrestling, but this to me it was just like table spot after table spot. It was just hardcore.
Really dangerous and
unnecessary. The crowd was sitting on their hands, which always makes it depressing when guys are killing themselves and no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
And it went 20 minutes. Like, literally 20 minutes of these two. Like, I didn't understand why.
I was very desensitized to a lot of this.
Scary spot where Devin Storm went to deliver a sunset flip over the top rope, and on his way down, his foot hit the table, and then Sabu completely missed the table, taking the back bump, went right down to the floor. Later we saw a DVD onto a chair by Storm. Unique chair spots.
See, like that spot alone should have been the finish, and instead it was really just
a
transition.
Just a near fall. We saw... Storm body slammed Sabu with a chair, so it landed on his back as he slammed the chair and Sabu together. Sabu got busted open on the forehead. We saw a vertical suplex by Sabu onto folding chairs and then followed up with an Arabian face buster. Then the triple jump by Sabu went over the top and through a table as Storm moved out of the way. And it was just a very, they did all these big spots like the Arabian face buster, the DVD, and then it was just a random roll up by Storm to get the win. And then Sabu got all his heat back afterwards where they brawled to the entrance. Sabu climbed up the entrance like by their mini Titantron and did an Arabian face buster off the entrance onto Storm through a table. So what was the point of this?
This is overkill, definitely. Just listening to you recap everything. Yes.
Backstage, Lenny Lane and Lodi, remember them? They did a backstage skit where Lodi was sewing the back of Lenny's tights, and there was a thread that he had to bite off.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Mark Madden, what the fuck was this? Mark Madden introduces Larry Zbysko, and this was Madden's best work of putting over Larry Zbysko, who proceeded to come out and just cut a promo on Vince McMahon Jr.
Yeah.
And challenged him to a match in the WWA. Vince is going to come to the WWA to work Larry Zbysko.
Yeah, Zbysko came out and, you know, cut a relatively sentimental promo about his career in the WWWF and praised Vince McMahon Sr. Then he just gets really, really, really angry. This is the most angry I've ever seen Larry Zbysko, actually.
He said Chris Jericho is too short to be a star. And I was just thinking, how tall is Larry Zbysko?
How tall is he?
He couldn't be taller than Chris Jericho. Yeah, look, really, look it up. Jericho is not the shortest guy in the world. He's not Kevin Nash, but at the same time, I mean, are we... 2002...
5'9".
Is who? Jericho?
Larry Zbysko.
And how tall... Jericho cannot be less than 5'9". I've stood next to him.
5'10". Oh, my God.
Oh, highlight of the show right there.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, pro wrestling. So great. So he just cuts a whole promo on Vince McMahon. And then the next night on Raw, Vince McMahon came out and said, I am stepping down as the chairman of the WWF, and I've joined the WWA. So it's going to be Zbysko and Vince McMahon at Eruption in Melbourne. That brings us way to, oh, wow, Lenny and Lodi versus Rick Steiner and Ernest Miller.
The dog and cat team.
Oh, was that why they put them together?
I don't, that's what Mark Madden or
oh
or
my
Borash
god,
said.
That probably
know.
Was the logic.
Should have asked
why was
Borash.
Miller a babyface? I get whatever, it doesn't matter.
He was a babyface in WCW, was he not?
It's all a blur, that end of WCW. Yeah. Miller says that he'll kiss Madden's ass if he loses. Lodi brought out his signs, the funniest of which were, we're not Chuck and Billy.
Yeah.
And what can we say? Ernest Miller kicked Lenny. And this got
was,
the win.
Yeah, that was really it. That,
like
this
45
was,
seconds. I think Devin Storm and Sabu went like 10 minutes too long.
Yeah, I think this was probably the first time I'd ever seen a tag match end without even one tag for the losing team. Lodi never even came into the ring.
Just throwaway match and probably wasn't cheap to get at least Rick Steiner.
Yeah,
there.
And they beat the shit out of Madden later. Yep. For no reason. Ernest Miller started pushing him and then went up the stage and then came back down and did some more.
And that brings us to our main event way, the clash of a second generation star. Well, you can almost say third generation for Jarrett because his father was a worker and then later a promoter, and his grandmother was a promoter as well, not a worker, but Christine Jarrett was his grandmother. Wow. So there you go, a long family line. And then we have the lineage of Brian Christopher, the son of Jerry Lawler, for the WWA title way. And I was dead. Because I had to watch this all in one sitting.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's just a long show.
Yeah, I fell asleep and I had to wake up and finish it.
They brawled throughout the crowd, and then all the heat was put on the referees at the end who disagreed over the finish. And then the refs started fighting, got distracted. Christopher attempted a pile driver, took a low blow. Jarrett hit the stroke and got the win. And I was like, this finish sucked. This was such a bad main event.
Yeah.
They should have done Jarrett and Eddie in the main event.
They really should have, but I guess they planned for all that Jerry Lynn stuff to happen.
I guess.
I
there was just look throughout this show of who you could have put in the main event.
Yeah. Like, Steiner, I would have preferred. Steiner, they had him beat up Disco. Why not put Steiner against Jarrett for a much bigger name?
Oh,
at
Scott
least.
Steiner.
Yeah.
I thought you meant Rick.
No, not Rick Steiner.
Yeah, I had no interest in any of this.
The Funkster.
The Funkster would have been great.
No, it wouldn't.
You could have done a recreation of Bash at the Beach with Jarrett. And then Russo comes out and calls him a piece of garbage. That was a revolution show, everyone. 2.5 out of 10 for me.
Oh, okay.
Six-way was okay, and the cruiserweight match between Guerrero, Psicosis, and Hoovy was good.
Yeah.
Nothing blew me away on the show, though I enjoyed Zabisco and Bret Hart's crazy promos.
In the ring, I thought this was not a bad show. I thought they had some passable to, at least, the cruiserweight stuff was very
When
very
it was
good.
Over, I never wanted to watch another show of WWE again. It was like something I watched, mm-hmm. I paid $20 for, and I will not be watching Eruption.
The production quality was terrible.
Yeah,
however.
It felt it very terrible. Indie.
Yeah, I give it a 4 out of 10. Did you guys review this on the Law, or why did you purchase this?
I wasn't with the Law at this time. They did review this on the Law. I do recall them talking about it.
And you just decided to purchase this.
It was on one night and I watched it because I think they. I can't remember why. It's just a Sunday night, I guess, and I ordered it. It was $20. Yeah, because I only know that because Mark Madden brought up the 1995 price tag during his commentary. So that was it. That was my fault, I guess, for buying WWE Revolution.
No. So. It's very worthwhile, especially
yeah,
now.
As soon as I started watching this, I regretted picking it to review. Not the worst show I've ever seen, but it was boring.
I thought it was actually a pretty funny review. Oh. It fills in the gap. For a portion of pro wrestling that I don't think many people...
No one has seen this show. I got zero feedback from people who watched Revolution. So it's one that I'm glad we reviewed for people that never saw it or even knew what the WWE was. World Wrestling All-Stars.
This really was almost a genesis for TNA. I mean...
This was the blueprint for TNA. Yeah. It really was. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully they addressed the production because TNA, even in the Nashville Fairgrounds... Production was okay, way better than this.
Yeah.
And now you look at their productions, it's good.
Very good, very WCW level, I'd say.
Yeah, it's not WWE level, but it's suitable.
Oh, yeah.
So that's our review right there, Wei. Do we have any feedback to get to where our members are continuing to grow? I'm very confident we will hit 600 by WrestleMania, but we still need you to join. Remember, reviewaway.com, reviewaway.com. You can just look the Live Audio Wrestling's Review Away group on Facebook. We're hoping to hit 600 members by WrestleMania on March the 28th.
Even though it's only been less than 24 hours since the podcast has been up, we do have a couple responses. Cody Brown just finished listening to Raw for this week. Raw being a review away. Once again, awesome. I can't believe you guys didn't point out Nash and his phantom punches. When he throws the punches at Austin and Hogan, his hands a good 8 inches away from their heads. Shame. Anyways, keep up the good work, fellas. And then Andy Black in his responses. I can't believe how harsh they were on Hall. Scott carried Steve Austin's crippled ass to an entertaining match.
Oh, yeah. We were just had our blinders on for
Cody
that.
Cody Brown says, yeah, they always hate on Hall. And for good reason most of the time. I thought he was fairly decent in this match. Well,
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
No, that's fine. And then Patrick Mayhew puts a link to Scott Hall overselling the stunner right above it. We also have WrestleMania feedback from our good friend Brent Chittenden, and he says, the title says Booger Red. Hey guys, the mention of Booger Red got me wondering, so I went and looked it up. Here's what JR himself said about it on his blog. I used the descriptor Booger Red to describe The Undertaker when his hair was red back in the day as a spinoff of former University of Texas and Atlanta Falcon middle linebacker Tommy Nobis, who was an amazingly physical and tough football player in this era and was called Booger Red. Taker's Smash Mouth style, his hair color, and his Texas roots gave me the idea that was squashed by the powers that be. I think largely because they did not understand the nickname, which was essentially my fault for not explaining it. Now, in addition, Brent says, now in addition to that, I'm not positive, as I couldn't find specific references, but I'm pretty sure Booger Red is also an American legend along the lines of the Jersey Devil. Keep up the great work, and if you ever need a guest commentator, I'd be happy to come on.
Oh, well, there's some excellent background information. WWF told them, stop it.
Yes.
That's great. Well, everyone, that will bring us to the end of another edition of Review Away for next week. Way, it's the ball is in your court for the review next week. So what are you going to put on display for next week?
Well, I was looking at our calendar, and we have about four more reviews to go before WrestleMania. So
four?
Yeah, we got four more.
No,
we got four more. We got four more weeks until the 20th.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, four more weeks. Well, yes, 1, 2, 3. Because the 20th March. Sorry, wait. Give me 1 second. Calendars. March 21st would be the last review before Mania.
That's true.
So we do have a few more. How many Manias do you want to get through?
Doesn't matter.
For all this? I mean, I'm thinking of three that we absolutely have to do. So.
I want to do 22 for sure because we went to it.
Yeah, and I think 9 was another one that was
Yeah, 9's got a lot of votes too.
Well, I think we should put off the WrestleMania again for one more week and then just do a strong push right where in March. So to bring us to March, I would like to do a show that's not very typical of our podcast. I would like to do UFC 2, a pay-per-view that took place on March of 1994 and features Fred Edish.
Fred Edish. All right. Well, next week we'll do our first UFC review. So for those of you out there who maybe are only pro wrestling fans, we will cater it to wrestling fans as well. I think you will enjoy some of the parallels, especially how campy UFC was in the early days. So next week, UFC 2 here on Review Away. And with that, to get us set, let's go out with the UFC theme music at that time period.